The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and I'm joined by Craig Tucker of the KM Sports Desk. Our guest is no stranger to success. He won promotion via the Conference South Plows with Dartford and then starred for the Darts as they finished eighth in the top flight of non-league football. Those performances earned him a move to Cambridge United, and while injuries limited his appearances, he did make an outing in the FA Trophy final at Wembley and was on the bench again at Wembley when Cambridge won promotion back to the Football League. He was part of the Dover team that reached the third round of the FA Cup, where they were knocked out by Premier League Crystal Palace at Crabble. The bright lights of Ebbsfleet came calling, so we'll no doubt discuss the fallout from the fall back in that playoff final against Maidstone. His career has gone full circle now as he is back at Prince's Park and pushing for playoffs once again under manager Steve King. So it's all welcome to the podcast to Dartford defender Tom Bonner.
Great to be on. I was always listening to the podcast. I've had a few good friends on, so I was really excited to be here.
Thanks for coming in, Tom. Thanks for your time. Let's start with the current season at Dartford. Didn't start how you wanted those first 10 games, obviously change of manager, but since Steve King's gone to the club, things have gone from strength to strength.
Yeah, no, Kingy come in, he's really turned it around. I'm not sure where he was in the league. It might have been, you know, 15th, 16th position, maybe even lower. And we're now sixth, sitting comfortably in the playoffs at the moment. So, you know, that just speaks for itself. He's come in, he's changed it a lot. He's brought a lot of people in. He's got rid of a few people. We've had a lot of different formations and players. But everyone he brings in is really good players. They've improved us massively. And I think it's really exciting times at Dartford under Kingy.
You're obviously one of those that remained. Do you have the old guard almost taken to those changes? Because sometimes you can get little clicks in the dressing room, not really going to welcome it.
Obviously, when a new manager comes in, there's always a risk of, you know, you might not be his cup of tea. He might not like you. He might really rate you. So it was just a case, me personally, getting my head down, you know, starting from scratch. I've been at Dartford a long time, but when King got a job, I thought, I'm going to treat this like it's my first day at the club, show him what I'm about. He's made changes. I've been fortunate enough. I've played pretty much every game for Kingy, and it's going well. But, yeah, the guys that have come in, look, Dartford's a great club. It's a family club. We treat everyone. We get on really well. We're a team. If someone comes in on training, they join the group chat. And, yeah, we just treat everyone, whether they've been here for a week, a season, 10 years. It's a family club. We welcome everyone.
Fair to say there's been a style change as well? Have you had to sort of adapt a little bit in the way of playing the ball out from the back a bit more?
Yeah, no, definitely. Kingy come in and the first thing he said was, look, I want to play good football. I want to change the way Dartford have... I wouldn't say we're like a Route 1 team. We just had a style of playing that fitted us. We've done it well. But Kingy come in and said, look, he wants it to be more attractive. He wants to play out from the back. He wants the fans to go away from a game, whether we've won, lost or drawn, and try to be more entertaining. And no, I fully bought into that. I've always enjoyed playing out from the back, you know, but in non-league football, it's not always the way. Very few teams are successful playing out from the back in non-league football. So, no, I was really excited when Kingy got the job. I thought, this is a chance to, you know, improve even more. We do try. We're trying to be more attractive. And I think if you ask the fans, they'll all say it's probably the best football they've seen at Dartford for a long time. And I'd have to agree with that.
Some of the players that have come in are quite exciting to watch, aren't they? And there's a lot of pace in the team now as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I think we've pretty much had a penalty in every game since Kingy's come in. And that just goes to show you the sort of players we've got. We've got quick, nippy players that are positive, getting in the box. And we get players who haven't trained, and I don't know them. I'm looking, I think, oh, who's this guy? And they're unbelievable. I think Jacob Ajipon come in, and I just couldn't believe how good he was. And I thought, Kingy might be a bit lucky with that one. And then Tariq Haider come in without training, and you think, whoa, he's another good player. And everyone he's brought in, they've just improved Dartford massively. And everyone's brought in. They all play football the right way. And as I said, the amount of penalties we're getting just goes to show like what these guys are about, getting at the ball, little intricate passes, running at people. And yeah, it's definitely exciting to watch.
And playoffs now, I mean, when Steve came in, obviously it was make sure he gets clear of the relegation zone, but things changed very quickly, that run of results. And now you're not nailed on for the playoffs, but you'd be pretty disappointed if you didn't get there now.
Yeah, definitely. I always have my sights set on the playoffs because, as I said, I've been at Dart for a long time. We're a big club, especially in the National League South. We've always got to be up there and challenging. And not taking anything away from Kingy, because we was in a bad position when he come in. And it's been unbelievable. We're in the playoffs now. I think there's quite a comfortable cushion, but we're not resting on that. We want to finish as high as possible and, more importantly, have a bit of momentum going into the playoffs. But no, we're not really looking at that, just taking each game as it comes. And as long as we keep winning, everyone's happy.
There's three teams directly above you that I think all on the same number of points as we speak at the moment. You've got a game in hand as well, so that gap could be 4 points. Is it a case of now, once you've got to cement your place in there, but you've got one eye on seeing how high you can finish to give yourself an advantage once the playoffs come around?
Yeah, definitely. You always have an eye on the table. I always look at who's playing who, and I know with the games coming up, a lot of the teams above us are playing each other. So now you've always got an eye on what's going on above you, but you also keep an eye on what's going on below you. You don't want teams to be sneaking up without you realising. So it's cliche, but it really is just game by game. We want to win every game, and I think we've got Chelmsford at the weekend coming up. That's all we're focusing on, Chelmsford. If we get a positive result, we'll move on, focus on having it away, and we really don't look any further than the next game.
Talk about the weekend just gone, win at St Albans. I mean, you would have been expected to win there, but never easy against a team that trying to stay in the division.
No, and St Albans, I'm sure you're aware, they're a bogey team for Dartford. I think I read it's 9 years since we won there, a Dartford team. So look, they're in the bottom two, but they're a good team. You know, I don't think the league table's a true reflection of how good St Albans can be. Added to that, the fact we never get there and, you know, get a good result. So, no, we knew it was going to be a tough game. I gave away a penalty in the first half. So when they put that away, you think, oh, St Albans away. They've won nil up. They've got their tails up. But no, I thought we played really well. We got a goal back before half time, and again, another penalty in the second half. So I think it's a great result. Their second was from bottom, but I don't think that's a true reflection on how good they are and how tough that game was. So I think it was a really good result for us.
You beat me to my next question, which was I was going to mention the penalty. I mean, but you know, fair play. Yeah. You put your hands up. You were honest and got there first. Your form, how pleased are you with how you're playing at the moment?
I'm really enjoying my football. I don't really look too much into how I'm playing. I really don't want to be cliche, but I just take it game by game. All I want to do is have a good game at the weekend. If I don't have a good game or things don't go right, I'll forget about how good the past or month, 6 weeks or since Kingy's been in. So, no, again, just take it each game as it comes. But I'm really enjoying my football at the moment, and I want it to continue as long as possible.
What's he like behind the scenes? Because he's had a lot of success, hasn't he, Steve King? And probably most people in football have got an opinion on him. What is he like behind the scenes, and what's the sort of secret of his success?
Do you know what? The secret to King's success, I can't put my finger on it, because I've never worked with Kingy before. Played against these teams, and he's always been a manager that's got teams playing good football. So it was interesting to see if he'd stick to his guns coming in at Dartford. And to be fair, he did. That's the first thing he said. He wants to get us playing good football. But it's his knowledge of the league. Kingy knows the league inside out. He knows every single team. Even down to what end they like kicking. Before the game, we talk about they like kicking uphill second half, and his knowledge of players, as I said, he's bringing players in without training with us, chucking them in at the deep end, and they're like star performers. You're thinking, wow, he's a good player. And he hasn't got that wrong yet. We haven't brought a player in that hasn't really worked out. So, yeah, I just think his knowledge of the league, his knowledge of non-league players, and his knowledge of all the clubs, he's pretty much bang on with what he says. And, yeah, it's definitely just... yeah, knowledge.
I think he played down the playoffs for quite a while after he first came in. Did he do that privately, or had he sort of said all along that we can get ourselves up there and
No, it wasn't. We never set targets to make the playoffs. Me personally, I always want Dartford to be challenging for the title. Like if I was to look at Dartford, if we're not in the playoffs, I think it's a travesty. But no, Kingy come in and went about his business. each game as it comes. We had a really tough spell when he first came in. I think we had Maidstone in the FA Trophy, and we got to Maidstone and we had 12 players. And I think Andy Pugh played centre mid, Ryan Hayes played up front, and we was like, wow, we could be in trouble here. And I thought we had played Maidstone at their place, and he's just got this way of getting the best out of people. And as time went on, you know, we started to sign more players were coming in, and I think we've got a real good balance now of experience but young, exciting players.
I just wonder what the potential is compared to the great side that Tony Berman put together that got into the conference and did so well in the conference. You got sort of view on what Steve King could do at Dartford?
Again, this is me personally. I think Dartford need to be an established National League side, sort of what Bromley have done the past few years. I see Dartford doing the same. I think it's achievable. I think Kingy knows the right people. His history shows he can be successful. I don't want to put added pressure on anyone, myself included, but there's no limit to where Dartford can go. The infrastructure's there. I think the club are ready to go full-time if needed. What we've done in the past was massive for Dartford. I think you look back at that team and I don't even quite believe how good that Dartford team was. We had an England international now in goal. And I think the National League that year was the toughest it's ever been. I mean, you look through the teams we beat and it was just relentless ex-Football League club after ex-Football League club. But no, there's no reason Dartford can't reach them heights, but then push on from that. Because I think Dartford was on the verge of something really special that year. We lost a lot of players to full-time football, so yeah, I'm sure Kingy's looking at getting Dartford back to that level and then pushing on further from there.
Yeah, that was an extraordinary season, wasn't it? Because I think I remember talking to Tony Berman at the start of the season, you had a slowish start and then it just clicked, didn't it? You just won lots of games. He said Bettinelli was performing wonders in goal, and it just seemed to be a hell of a side and top part-time club in the country as well, and it just seemed that it'd be onwards and upwards for Dartford. And then not quite sure, you know, what happened after that, the relegation, but whether the sort of standard caught up with the club or it was too soon, I'm not sure what it was. But
no, we lost our first three games. We played three, lost three in that year, and I was a bit, well, I don't think we're ready for the National League. And then I think we beat Kidderminster at home 1-0, and I don't know what happened, but we just clicked. I mean, Marcus Bettinelli come in, like an unbelievable player, unbelievable goalie. We knew he'd go all the way. But we just clicked. We had a really good team, and it got to the stage where I was turning up at Dartford thinking it literally doesn't matter if Luton are here, Wrexham, Mansfield, anyone, we're going to win. And if we don't win, we'll be in the game. Can't put my finger on why it was so successful other than it was just a really good team. And Dartford was on the back of a lot of success. And I think we just got in the habit of being a successful team winning, and we took that into the National League that year.
Hmm. It's tough to leave?
Oh yeah, it was awful to leave, if I'm honest. I loved Dartford Football Club. You know, when I was there, it was my first club since moving back to London, because I moved up north for a bit when I was younger. So I mean, I had a lot of family and friends going to games. There was good crowds and there was a lot of success, but it was the draw of full-time professional football. That was the only thing that was ever going to get me away from Dartford. And yeah, when I started getting interest from Football League clubs and full-time National League clubs, it was, you can imagine, it's every boy's dream to be a professional footballer. It was too hard to turn down.
And a good club in Cambridge as well.
Yeah, no, I first heard about Cambridge's interest in December that season, really early on. And yeah, as the season progressed, I started to get agents ringing me up, so you think I must be doing something right here. I'll get an agent calling saying I've got a club interested. They wanted to know what you earn, what it would take to get you. But Cambridge was always at the forefront. They was always in contact asking how I was getting on. Not directly, not tapping players up, but, you know, just you hear things. And, yeah, I think it was Jez George just said all the right things. Really, really big me up. Sold the club to me. And as I said, if Dartford were a full-time outfit, I probably wouldn't have left. But, yeah, to be a professional footballer, it was something I couldn't turn down.
Yeah, it makes a big difference when you feel wanted. You made it feel wanted when you've got a decision to make, and you know, clearly that was the case.
Yeah. Looking back, Jez George was in charge a lot that year, and he was the guy who wanted to sign me, but it was actually Richard Money who took over. So actually, with a little bit of hindsight looking back, I signed that for that club on the basis of Jez George calling me, telling me this and that. But it was Richard Money, who was the manager. And looking back now, I don't think I was Richard Money signing. I think I was Jez George's, and that may have been the reason I weren't so successful there as I hoped to be.
Mm. What other options did you have at the time?
It started to get a bit silly, if I'm honest. It was Cambridge. And then like an agent got involved, and he'd be like, Tom Luton had been watching you. So I'm like, wow, Luton, that's massive. Wrexham. It was pretty much every team we played, I got told they was interested or they had people watching. And towards the end of the year, someone said the Gillingham have been sniffing around. And then I think someone even said the Millwall scout had my name marked down. So it got to a point where I was like, wow, you know, non-league Dartford, and all of a sudden, like, biggest club in South London, or one of, are interested. But nothing really comes to fruition with the bigger clubs. I think Gillingham offered me a trial potentially, which wasn't something I was interested in. So yeah, it actually got to a point where I had about 8 clubs asking what I was up to. But as I said, Cambridge were the ones who went and got me. You know, they took me to the club, showed me around, told all the right things to me. And regardless of money, location, that's where I was always going to go.
Yeah, and a couple of Wembley trips as well, so not a bad decision, all in all.
No, definitely, I don't regret going there at all. As you said, we won at Wembley twice. That's another boyhood dream, so it didn't end there. I wanted it to end, but I've got no regrets at all about joining Cambridge. We got promoted. We had the hell of a team. Yeah, we got promoted to the Football League, and then I had some games in the Football League the following year. So no regrets about going there, just didn't pan out how I really wanted it to.
Yeah, on the Wembley stuff, you're sort of limited involvement, but what is it like? Everybody says, don't they, it's everyone's dream to be at Wembley. So what is it like when you're actually there?
We tried to treat it as any normal game. You know, we didn't wear suits, we didn't stay over, we met the bus where we would have met the bus if we was playing, say, Hendon or a local team. We didn't have a fancy bus. We just tried to play it as a normal game. But you're playing at Wembley, you know. We've gone from 18 lads sharing one toilet to having 3 toilets each. There was a warm-up area by the changing room. And, no, it was just a surreal experience walking out onto the pitch. It's really hard to explain unless you do it. I think there was about 25,000-30,000 people there. So it's actually like a good dream come true, just running out. And obviously we won both games there, so, you know, I've done the old walk up the steps, lift the trophy, wave at friends and family. Yeah, it's a bit of a surreal experience, but yeah, I'll live with that forever.
When you first went to Cambridge, your appearances were restricted, so you got injured early on. Was that how it happened?
Yeah, I got injured in the first game. We had a really good pre-season. I remember Norwich coming down to the Abbey and we beat them 1-0 quite comfortably. And this is Norwich first team. It wasn't their under-23s, and there was such a buzz about the place. I think they'd been in the National League for 9 years and they went, right, this is the year we're going to get promoted. And you could really feel that. And we played Halifax on the first game, and they had Mark Roberts, who's now at Birmingham, Matty Pearson, who's at Luton in the Champ, Lee Gregory up front. It was a hell of a team. Halifax were a really good team, and we beat them 5-1. And yeah, something happened. I got a knock on my knee, but it was like a subconscious knock. I never felt it at the time. Something must have happened. And on the Sunday, my knee flared up, and I'm never injured. I've never had an injury, never had any problems. And I just had this problem with my knee. Went to the physio, and yeah, he said I tore my meniscus, or my meniscus tearing my cartilage. And we're Cambridge at full time. You know, I went and had an operation the next day. But I've never told anyone this. I never actually tore my meniscus. And it was only after the op, I had the surgeon told me I got a knock above my knee and it sort of burst a blood vessel, hence the swelling. But it's the same swelling you'd get if you do tear your cartilage. So I had an op I didn't need to have. Yeah, and that put me out for about 2 months. And Cambridge started like a house on fire. I think we won 10 games out of 10. So it was hard to get back in after that. I played here and there, but yeah, it was just really tough to get back into that winning side. We was going home and away winning games, and I had no excuses. I couldn't knock on the door and say I need to play because I'd only made one start. So yeah, it was really tough time. And it was my first ever injury, first ever op. And I'd waited a long time to get my chance at club like Cambridge. Yeah, it was a real tough start, I should say.
So you found out that you'd been misdiagnosed then?
Yeah. Yeah, the surgeon woke up in the morning and he actually said, in hindsight, we should have waited a week to see what happened with the swelling. But they wanted to get me operated on straight away. So, yeah, it was tough to hear that. But as I said, these things happen in football. You know, I thought, well, I just need to get back as fit as soon as I can. But, yeah, it was actually a misdiagnosis. The physio at Cambridge at the time was... He is honestly the best physio I've ever worked with, the most knowledgeable guy, but I think we rushed into a decision to have an op. So, yeah, it's just one of them things.
Talk about some of the players you played against when you was at Cambridge. But you had some good players of your own in that team, didn't you?
Yeah, again, we had a really good team. I went there with Tom Champion, so it was nice to go with a friendly face, but we had Adam Cunnett and Tom Elliott up front. They're two players you wouldn't want to play against every week. Off of them, we had Andy Pugh, Ryan Donaldson, who was like regular in the England sea. And then in midfield, Luke Berry. He's now at Luton. Unbelievable player. It was just a real good team. But it was all down, I believe, to Richard Money, the manager. He is hands down probably the best manager I've ever worked with. His coaching was unbelievable. Training sessions were hard. And the homework he'd done on the opposition was, it just helped you immensely. You knew exactly what he was up against. You never went into a game and got surprised by anything. You knew what every single player could do. And I think that was the reason it was such a good team and such a good year.
How much did you enjoy being full-time and once you were fit, did you benefit from it?
Oh, massively, massively. You gained so much like sharpness. Fitness was... You're at the peak of fitness, you know. You're running around, working every day. We used to go to David Lloyd twice a week. Every Friday we went for a swim and had a stretch and you just felt brilliant. We commuted up. It was me, Tom Champion, Andy Pugh. And honestly, that was like the best times you can ever imagine. They're two of like... Pugh is like my best mate now. I've been with Tom Champion a long time and the commutes were great, but they were long days driving up to Cambridge. Again, in hindsight, I probably would have moved if I had the opportunity again because, it takes a lot out of you. But, no, being a full-time footballer, if you can stay injury-free, you're in the peak of fitness. You don't really have to worry about how you're going to feel on a Saturday and you ain't got to get up for work, silly o'clock the next day, so you've got enough time to recover. Just staying injury-free, it just puts you in peak performance.
Let's rewind to the very beginning. You started off as a youngster. Was you at QPR somewhere?
Yeah, no, I was at QPR, I think, from the age of 8. I was there for almost 10 years, right up through the youth teams at QPR. I was a good player when I was at QPR.
Centre-back then as well?
Centre-back, yeah. I know they thought highly of me. I was involved with England schools at the younger age groups. And when I got a little bit older, Scotland found out I had a Scottish grandmother. So I played in the Victory Shield for Scotland, which at the time is on Sky Sports. It's sort of the first step to really becoming a player. But, yeah, things happened at QPR. They went from an academy to a centre of excellence. They cut the teams in half, and it was actually my team that got cut. But there was me and one other player who got kept on. But this meant we had to train with the first-year scholars, but we were still at school. So I sort of lost my whole squad, my whole team, everyone I knew. And it went from training two nights a week to having a Tuesday off school training with scholars. And yeah, I just wasn't ready for that at the time. I stepped into like a full-time environment one day a week and I think it just swallowed me up a bit. I was still a kid. I hadn't grown up and I weren't ready for that. So yeah, now they decided not to offer me a full-time scholarship when I was 16. And that's when I moved up to Northampton.
We'll go to Northampton in a minute. I'm going to ask you, are you English or Scottish now then?
Oh no, I'm English. You can't get more English than me. No, the Scotland thing was, I think the head of football at QPR at the time was Scottish, Bobby Ross. And he had a real soft spot for me. He really liked me as a player, had high hopes for me. So I think he let the Scottish FA know that they had this English lad who could play. So no, I went there and I've done really well. You know, I represented Scotland. I've got about 5 or 6 caps. I went to camps when I was in the under 18s and 19s as well. So, no, massive opportunity, but no, I'm English.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
And then Northampton, how did that one come about?
I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure. I'm not sure if your name gets put about at that, but we had a few clubs ringing up asking what was going on. And I just felt at the time, moving into Digs away from home might be like a good thing. And I'll be honest, I was just really looking forward to it, you know, moving out at 16 to go and be I know it's a scholarship, but you're basically a full-time footballer with a bit of education on. I had a few offers and I just thought, yeah, look, this is perfect for me. It's not too far, but I get to move away. I can really focus on football. Went up there and I just loved it. They said all the right things. So, yeah, I moved there when I was 16, up to Northampton.
And then playing-wise there, was you close first-team football at that point?
Do you know what? When I was a first-year scholar, I had a lot of, I wouldn't say success, but I was training a lot with the first team. Colin Caldwell was a manager. He was a centre-half. He was a Tottenham man. He obviously knew I had a...
Fellow Scot.
A fellow Scot as well. Yeah, it's actually perfect. Scottish Tottenham. But no, he seemed to have a real soft spot for me. And if anyone got called up to the first team, it seemed to be me. And I was on the bench a few times. I made my debut. And this was all when I was 17. Northampton got promoted from League 2 to League 1, and I was pretty much, most weekends, I was with the first team, whether it was travelling, sitting on the bench, helping out. So I was really looking forward to my second year. I thought, you know what, I'm going to break into the first team as a 18-year-old. But Colin Caldwell got the Nottingham Forest job. And I'm not saying, like, that obviously, who knows what would have happened, but I genuinely believe if Caldwell had stayed, I would have got my chance at Northampton. John Gorman come in, and I didn't train with the first team once in my second year. So, yeah, it sort of worked. Normally, your first year is quite quiet. But mine was the other way around. Started well. Didn't get a sniff for the first team in my second year, but I still got offered a pro contract. And, yeah, my first year pro was pretty much the same. You know, I never got that close to the first team. I was training with them every day, but I think I made 3 or 4 squads. But it was in League One. They got promoted the year. So yeah, I was in a League One first team squad without getting any real opportunities.
Was that tough mentally to cope with, knowing that you were so close a year or two before, but then so far away?
Not at the time, because at the time I was like a confident lad. I thought, it don't really matter who's a manager, I'll play. Looking back, it's like a hindsight thing. I always think, if he did stay, I do believe he would have given me my chance and, you know, given me some time to be a League One, if you will, player. But now at the time, I just thought, no, we'll move on with some new manager, try and show your stuff. But you sort of get a feeling when you're a young kid whether you're going to get a chance at a club. And it was clear that for the last 2 years at Northampton, I didn't see myself ever breaking into the first team again.
Is that when the loan spells come about first, was it? Or do you move on to another club before you go out on loan?
Actually, my first loan spell was when I was a first-year scholar. Caldwell pulled me in and said, look, you're doing really well. We like you. Go and play men's football. And I went to Bedford. And I had a really good time at Bedford. I don't know if you know, but I actually scored 2 goals in a playoff final.
I didn't want to bring it up.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd bring that one up. Put that on it in. I scored 2 goals in a playoff final. I went there for the last 3 or 4 months of the season, and it couldn't have gone better. So we got promoted that year to the Conference South. Northampton got promoted to League One, so it was, yeah, hell of a year for me. I got involved in sort of both celebrations, if you will.
And then after Bedford, you go back, you think you're going to get involved, but you don't, so you have more loan spells, do it, but because you ended up at Rushden and Diamonds, didn't you?
No, I signed for Rushden and Diamonds. It got to about 6 weeks before the last game of the season, my old youth team manager said, look, Tom, you're not going to be offered a first-year extension. And I'm the sort of player, I just want to play football. I didn't want to sit there for 6 weeks and say, oh, OK. So I went and joined Rushden, who at the time were a huge, huge non-league team. I don't know if you've managed to go to the old ground, but they used to have like a marble staircase at like one of the best stadiums, and the facilities had 6 pitches. The pitches were like Wembley. It was even though there was like a league below Northampton and a non-league club, I've never seen anything like it. So yeah, that was my first foray into non-league, if you will.
Quite sad then, as an ex-Rushden player, to see the demise of what it is. I mean, it's not even there now, is it?
No, I've not been there since I left a long time ago, but from where that club was, they had a real good investor. it honestly would be heartbreaking for anyone involved in the club to see it now. Apparently, yeah, as you said, it's not there anymore. It's all overgrown. But what that club was, it was unbelievable. So, if it has gone there, I don't even know if they've built on it or if it's derelict. But, yeah, it's a travesty because it was like a championship club, the way the facilities and the way it was run.
Mr. Wesley, he was there, wasn't he? Graham Wesley.
Wesley, he was the one who signed me.
Tell us about him. Everyone's got a story about him, haven't they? I think
I could sit here for a few hours with stories on Wesley. Looking back, I was a young kid. I didn't know any different. It was only since I've left Rushden I realised how, I want to say, crazy Graham Wesley was. At the time, again, I thought this was just normal. Maybe this is how all football clubs are run. But we used to train at 3 p.m. on a Friday to simulate a game at 3 p.m. on a Saturday. And we used to train for 90 minutes. But we also used to do classwork. And I remember one day, now I'm 18 here, I'm a young lad, not big in the dressing room. There were some big characters in this team. And you used to have to write the starting 11 you would start on Saturday. And you had to give an explanation why everyone was playing and why you'd left people out. And I'm a kid, I'm 18. I'm like, right, so I'm saying to him, and I'm leaving out a lad who's got 300 football league experiences, and I've got to explain to him why I've left him out. And yeah, there was some crazy goings on with Graham Wesley. And it's only looking back you realise how ridiculous it was. But saying that, he was a hell of a manager. We was really successful. Really successful. And I think he got sacked on the back of a 15-game unbeaten run. And then that was the end of Wesley. I've not managed to work with him again, but when I meet people that have worked with Graham Wesley straight away, like you just did there, it's like, what is he like? Is this true? Is this true? And I think everything you've heard probably is true.
What was the maddest thing he did then in your time with him?
He loved texting. He'd done everything by text. And he texted me once, and I'm a centre-half, young lad, tall, and he said, if I played you left mid tomorrow, what could you bring me? And I'm looking at my phone, I'm like, whoa, I don't know how to respond to that. And I was like, I'd better sell myself and say, like, look, if you do play me there, obviously I want to play. So I think I said, like, I'll get up and down, I'll be good in the air. Didn't think anything of it. And then Saturday, he played me left mid. Now, I've never played anywhere other than centre-half my whole life. And yeah, he played me left mid because of this text. And I think he'd done that to a few players at the time. But yeah, that was surreal.
I take it you took a few players on, a few crosses in the box. And...
do you know what? I actually lasted about 25 minutes. I think, it didn't work. You know, I think it got to about 30 minutes in and my number come up. But to be fair to him, he felt terrible. He apologised. He's like, look, you're a young lad. I shouldn't have done that. But safe to say, I've never played left mid since.
One thing I did want to ask as well was, how many times did you put yourself in the team? You're 18 years old, you had to write out your formation. Did you put yourself in one week and then you drop yourself the next and just say, didn't think I trained well this week, Gaffer, you know?
Yeah, I did. I didn't want to put myself in every week. We also did do one thing where we had to, he had everyone's name on the board after a game and you had to give yourself a mark out of 10. So I used to go up and think, oh, I don't want to go higher because I'm not sure if you thought I had a good game or not. So there's a lot of sixes and most of the boys done six and you think that's it, and then you go, why have you given yourself a six? And you're like, oh god. So there's a lot of, I was put myself in one week. I thought, well, I better drop myself this week, you know. So, but as I said, I was 18, I didn't really know that was that abnormal, if you will, at the time. It's only looking back, it's got some stories from Rushden, yeah.
For the latest reaction and reports from the games that matter, visit our website at kentonline.co.uk.
A couple of years after you went to Rushden, you end up at Dartford. Had you been looking for a club? Had it been a case of you went on trial, didn't you, first of all, at Dartford before you joined?
No, but it was, I left Rushden and I joined Hinckley in the Conference North. And I had about 2 years in the Conference North, and that was when my eyes were open to the world of non-league football. It's a lot different to it is now, but I had 2 years in the Conference North, and I thought, look, I'm a South London boy. I've been away from home for a long time now without really making it in a football world. I mean, if I was playing for Northampton or Peterborough or Cambridge, but I thought I'm a non-league footballer. I want to be, if I'm going to be non-league, I want to be non-league back home. And yeah, obviously Dartford, they sold themselves. It's, you know, they've got the best facilities around. Back then, all football clubs paid the same money. So everyone wanted to go to Dartford because of the facilities. And I knew a few people. I got in contact with Tony Berman. And yeah, he sort of said, can't offer you anything. I've not seen you play. Come down for pre-season. And the rest is history.
What did you make of Tony Berman when you first met him?
Yeah, no, Tony's Tony. He's a, he gets people playing for him who give everything for him. And it's just his personality. You'd like do anything for Tony Berman when you play for him. He's a real good guy. He didn't have to take me in that summer. It was the club's first season in the Conference South. I think he saw my CV. It was the Conference North for the past few years, Conference Premier. And yeah, he took me in and we've had a great relationship. I think in my first 3 years at Dartford, I didn't miss a game. I think I started every single game I was available. So we had a really good relationship. I feel like I've done well for Tone, but he also done really well for me.
How important is the relationship player-manager-wise? You mentioned some of the other managers you've played for, some you've liked, some you've maybe had question marks over, but how important is it?
When you're young, I think it's very important. I think every player does want to feel liked. Look, you're going to get bollocked, you're going to get shouted at by managers, but you also need the other side where you get an arm around you if you need it. As you grow older, me personally, I don't feel it's as important as long as you're doing the business on the pitch. But no, Berman, as I said, he was a guy you wanted to do everything for. We got on really well. And yeah, as I said, I didn't really see eye to eye with Richard Money as much as I did Tony. And when you look back, I enjoyed my football under Tony a lot more. So it just goes to show that it does mean a lot when you've got a manager who, you know, really rates you.
There was success, of course, on the field as well. I'll let you talk about the playoff final win over my beloved Welling. Might as well wrap it in, gone 1-0, a great day, 4,000 people.
That's it. I don't know if there's much more to add to that.
No, there isn't. We'll move on.
Leave it at that. No, yeah, not to, I don't want to disappoint you, but I was a bit disappointed in Welling that day.
You weren't the only one.
No, we had a good year. We finished second. We pushed Woking all the way. I don't think they won it by many points, 4 or 5 maybe. And that was when, like, I knew we would beat Welling. You know, it was just that sort of place. I thought if Welling do win today, they're going to have to be, every player's going to have to be a 9 and 10. And we got an early goal, and that sort of, the game sort of stopped there, I think. I think the ref could have blown the whistle. Nothing much happened, did they? But obviously for Dartford, it was a great day. As you said, all them 4,000 people, red hot day. And I felt with the way the league went, it was only fair that it was Dartford that, you know, got promoted. So that was a great day.
Even though you'd missed out on the title, was you always confident when you started that playoff campaign that you were going to get through and go all the way?
I knew we'd get promoted. It's weird. You don't get feelings like that often in football, but we went to Basingstoke and they had a really good team and we weren't great and we won 1-0. So you just think, like, we haven't even been good today. We've gone to Basingstoke on a Tuesday and won 1-0. And when you go at home taking a 1-0 advantage again, it was like, they're not going to turn us over today. They had a good goal, actually. I think the game was 3-2 or 3-1. So it wasn't as easy as I'm making out, but no, I was just so confident going into that playoffs. And that was my second playoff. I'd won the first one, so I just felt like, yeah, look, we're in a good place here, we'll win this, and we did.
Undoubtedly one of the highlights, I guess, rivals playing at Wembley. But what's it like playing at Prince's Park when it's a full house like that? The atmosphere, it must be pretty impressive when you're out on the pitch.
Yeah, we've always been really good at home, Dartford. And I actually would like to see Dartford's results when there's been, you know, crowds of 2,000 plus. I don't think there's many, if any, games that Dartford haven't performed or got a result. And that just goes to show what the place is like when it's busy. All the big games we've had at Prince's Park, we've done well. I think, I mean, like, Swindon beat us comfortably, but they was a League One team, you know. But other than the big FA Cup games, well, saying that, we took Port Vale all the way 1 year. But no, when Prince's Park is full, Dartford do well, and it just goes to show, like, that support. Dartford ain't got players that shirk that and think, oh, there's a lot of people here. It does the opposite effect. It brings everyone out, and it always has done.
Better under lights?
Yeah, better under lights. Always like better second half, you know, that the crowd always seems to double in size when you come out in the second half and you're kicking towards like the car park end. So no, as I said, Dartford busy under the lights, especially in playoff finals against Welling. It's a great place to play.
That was middle of the afternoon. I'm not giving you that one as well.
Yeah.
That was and then obviously once you go up playing those top teams as you mentioned earlier, something about that league, isn't there? It's where every non-league player wants to play his trade.
Yeah, as I said, I don't want to repeat myself, but the teams in the league that year, it was a catalogue of ex-Football League teams. And it's not just they're going away to the grounds, but they're bringing 500, 600, 700 fans to Dartford, whereas in the South, you get some teams that bring like 10, 15. So every game was, you know, there was 2,000 people every game, even if Dartford weren't really turning up. You know, like one of the big teams would bring nigh on 1,000 people, so that might have been one of the reasons we were so successful. You know, it was just rocking every game, pretty much from the first month of the season. I'd love to see the stats on how many games we lost at home that year, but it wouldn't have been many.
I know some of the other players have spoken about playing Luton as well.
Yeah, we'd done a double over Luton. I scored at Kenilworth Road. We won 2-0, so we didn't show any fear going to Luton. And I think there was about 7,000 people there, and we won 2-0. The Luton fans actually clapped us off the pitch. They booed their players. We stayed out for a little bit. We thought, we've got to walk through like the tunnel here. I think this could get a bit lively. And they all just stood up and applauded. And for a team like Dartford to get that at Luton, who are now in the Championship, it was, yes, surreal. But we just had that team at the time. We was going to places and winning. It weren't just Luton we went to. I think we went to Wrexham and won. We went to a lot of clubs in Grimsby. I think we've done a double over. So, yeah, that was a really good league.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Yeah, the loan at Dover. Chris Kinnear was doing very well at Dover at the time. And an excellent FA Cup run, which culminated in Palace, of all clubs, Premier League club at home.
Yeah, no, I started the year in League Two with Cambridge. And we played 8 games, and I think we won 3, drew 3, lost 2. And I felt like we've been like learning. There was a game at York away. I had a really bad game. The centre forward got the better of me, but I took it as like I'm learning. It is a step above what I've been used to. I'll get used to it. But no, Richard Money pulled me in and said, "Look, you're not going to play for me ever again. You need to go on loan." And at the time, like people don't know this, but I only had 2 options. I could either go to Tranmere on a 3-month loan, or Dover on a 4-month or 5-month loan. Other clubs were interested, but these were the only 2 clubs that would pay Cambridge my full wage. And yeah, I sat down with my missus. I said, look, we can move to Merseyside, but it's a loan deal. It felt like a big risk to, you know, relocate for 3 months. And the only other option was Dover, who trained around the corner from me. So yeah, really, Dover was the only option. So yeah, as I said before, I'm not going to sit at Cambridge, not wanted. The first or so, I think that weekend, I was playing for Dover.
That was harsh, wasn't it, on the strength of one game to be told you're not going to play for me again?
Yeah, I don't think it was based on one game. It happened after a game at York City, and we drew 2-2, and I gave away a penalty late on, and Richard Money was really harsh on me after. Like, it went on for about an hour. And then on the Monday, we watched the video, and he just, you could see him getting to boiling point, ready to blow when it got to the penalty incident. So, yeah, it was a rough week, shall we say. But no, look, this is football. Some managers do things nicely, some managers don't. Yeah, Richard Money said, look, you'll never play for me again. So, yeah, that was it. But no, look, I don't hold any grudges. It's football. Some people treat you well, some don't. And it didn't end that great.
So you chose Dover over, let's say, Tranmere, the distance, but a massive football club to be turning down.
Yeah, it was purely the loan fact. It just felt like a massive risk, you know. Again, in hindsight, is it a risk worth taking? Probably yes. But at the time, you know, I was living in South London. I thought it's a hell of a commitment to move to Liverpool for 3 months and then it doesn't work out. So no, that was why I chose Dover. Again, I don't ever have any regrets. I had a great time. Honestly, I had a great time at Dover, and I'll probably up there with Dartford played the best football I've played in my career. Hugely successful 4 or 5 months at Dover, so don't regret going there at all.
What was it like with Chris Kinnear? He's a manager who's had a hell of a lot of success. Some people criticise the way he played, but they had an awful lot of success.
Yeah, very similar to Tony as a person. Very similar in their styles, the way they spoke, when they dug people out, when they was putting an arm around you. But Dover were route one. When teams come to the Crabble, it was, you put your hard hats on, we're going to bombard you today. But we all bought into that. You know, we knew that's how we played, and we knew teams didn't like it. So I loved it. You know, we was, again, I don't think, when I went to Dover, we was in a relegation zone. And I got there, and I think we, when I left, it was mid-table. But no, we used to bat our teams. That was what we used to try and do. Go out, go long, win our headers, get the second balls. But saying that, we had Stephen Payne up front, Tom Murphy, Ricky Modeste, they were still really good players. And when you've got good players buying into the system, that didn't moan when we, you know, if you all shelled it long. Really good team. And yeah, leaving, I'll be happy to talk about that, because again, I felt like Dover was on the cusp of doing something really special.
Yeah. The Palace game, that was Pardew's first game, wasn't it, as Palace manager? That had a tough old time. Did you feel you had a sort of chance of winning it? I know they won comfortably, didn't they? But I think quite a lot of people felt Dover could even beat a Premier League club that day.
Before the game, I was confident, because I thought these players will never ever have played against a team like Dover with how we're going to play them. I don't like digging people out, but I've got a bit of a criticism for Dover before that game, in that we'd done no preparation on Palace. Just as we was going out to the tunnel, I was told it was 4-4-2 with Glenn Murray and, I can't even remember, Balassi behind him. But they played a completely different formation. And I just think if you're playing against Palace in front of the BT cameras, you sort of need to know what formation they're going to play and who's playing. And I knew the kit man at Palace at the time. And it was Pardew's first game. And he said, Tom, like, he's spent all week studying Dover. He knows everything, because he's not going to come and lose his first game against a non-league team. And as soon as the whistle went, I thought, whoa, these are up for it. We can't bully these. Just marking Scott Dan from a corner. I think I was marking Delaney, and they were like rougher than any non-league centre half with marks. So I thought, no, this is going to be a tough day. And it turned out they was head and shoulders above us,
yeah,
comfortably, yeah.
With the preparation, was that just Chris had so much faith in your lot that he didn't feel?
Yeah, I just think, we battered teams, and non-league football's rough. There's some real hard men, and we was on top of everyone. And I thought, I think you look at the Premier League and think, oh, it's all pretty. They're going to come to the Crabble. You know, you've got to walk up the hill. There's a slope in the pitch. Once they've headed about 10 balls in 5 minutes, they're not going to want it. But fair play to Palace, they was up for it. They was really up for it. And then it don't take long before, like, you know, the quality to come through. Once they sort of showed we couldn't bully them, they started to play a bit. And Barry Bannon that day, to this day, is the best player I've ever played against. And people probably look at Barry Bannon and think, like, yeah, good championship player. But we was like four people round him trying to rough him up, and I don't think he'd give the ball away.
No,
they was impressive that day, Palace.
I think you had the chance to sign for Dover. They wanted you, didn't they, to sign a permanent there, but you chose Eversleigh.
Yeah. I've got a bit of stick for that at the time, and I still get stick for it now, but I've never really explained my decision. I was on loan at Dover, and they trained 3 nights a week at the Beaverwood. Now, no disrespect to Dover, because I know they're running things properly now, but we used to wheel out floodlights on generators onto a park pitch, like really dangerous pitch. It was boggy, it was bad. And I know they wanted me because obviously it was going really well. And then Ebbsfleet got in contact, and I didn't want to drop down from the National League to the National League South, but what Ebbsfleet offered was, it was chalk and cheese to what Dover were offering. Ebbsfleet were full-time. They were doing things properly. Peter Varney was in charge, so I knew it weren't just a circus that were throwing loads of money about. It was a proper club doing things the right way. And although I saw a future at Dover, I couldn't turn down full-time football again to train basically in a park where we had to wheel out, you know, like you see on the motorway, light up for the road workers. And we used to get changed in a porter cabin with cold showers. And that was the reason I chose Ebbsfleet. It wasn't because people would say, oh, Ebbsfleet, loads of money. It was absolutely nothing to do with that.
It's the first thing people say, isn't it? You get thrown at you all the time, I guess.
Yeah, I actually, people forget as well, I was at Cambridge in League Two. I actually signed at Ebbsfleet on less money than I was on at Cambridge. So I actually took a pay cut to go to Ebbsfleet. But yeah, look, it's part of the territory. Ebbsfleet were making waves. I knew by going there, I wouldn't get any well wishes from anyone. I knew I'd upset Dover. I knew I'd upset Dartford because they're arch rivals. Yeah, and you don't get any well wishes. You just get like money grabber, mercenary. Oh, look who Ebbsfleet have signed. But at the time, again, I was 27, 26. It was the only option to be a full-time professional footballer. No one looks at that. They just think, oh, he's gone there for money. And yeah, it's harsh because you don't get any well wishes. No one says, oh, good luck, Tom. I hope it goes well. Everyone wants you to crash and burn. So, but at the time, yeah, it was the only option to carry on being a full-time footballer.
Do you put that out of your mind then when you're there, you can just concentrate on
football? Oh, no, once you're there, you take that. You know what it's like. It's sort of like siege mentality. Every team talks like, look, boys, this is their cup final. Everyone wants to be where we are. Everyone in the football world wants us to fail. So, no, you expect that and you sort of take that into games, knowing that everyone wants you to fail. You need to stick together here.
Jamie Day brought you in. He'd signed a lot of players, didn't he, at the time? He'd taken over and made quite a few changes. I think he was encouraged to sign players when he by the owner.
My first day there, I'll go on to Jamie Day in a minute, but I won't mention his name, but one of the guys, like, loves, loyal to the club, a real good servant of the club, said the chairman was like, you've been shopping in Lidl, why don't you go and shop in Harrods? That was his word. So he's like, sort of threw a bit of an open checkbook at players. But I've been travelling with Pewey for 2 years and he treated Jamie Day like a god. He couldn't have spoke highly enough of Jamie Day. Every day, Jamie Day, Jamie Day. Or when I was at Welling, Jamie Day. And Jamie Day was also at Dartford, so I didn't play with him, but everyone at Dartford said, what a player, what a player, unbelievable, great guy. So yeah, when Jamie Day got in touch, I'd heard nothing but good things. Like, this man was a god to a lot of people. Everyone loved him. And when I found out he was interested, he messaged me. I was like, whoa, this is Jamie Day. This is going to be great. Regardless of it being Ebbsfleet, him alone was a massive factor in me going there. So, yeah, and I heard really good things about him.
But it didn't last. It was strange, wasn't it? It was gone before the end of the season, wasn't it? He went just before the end of the season.
Yeah, he didn't last long. I went near the end of January. And to be honest, we didn't set the world alight. We showed glimpses of, you know, what we was about, but me personally, I think the problem was Jamie Day went and signed a lot of players, but Ebbsfleet didn't get rid of players he didn't want. So I think that you mentioned the click earlier. There was the click. You could, the first day I walked in the dressing room, I knew who was a new signing and who had been there before Jamie Day. You could just see. And it was a little bit like we was meant to be this team, you know, against the world. But in this own dressing room, there was people against each other. They weren't like well wishers when people weren't playing. It's a little bit poisonous. So this is just my personal opinion. I think we never got going because we didn't have a close-knit team. There was too many players and too many boys that knew they weren't wanted or didn't want to be there.
So was he as good as Pewey told you? Or?
Well, Pewey had lots of success under Jamie Day. I loved him. I loved training, but the results just weren't there. And when it looked like we had cracked it, we'd go and lose a game at home to a team we shouldn't have. So it was a real tough time. And obviously the pressure that we had on us as players playing for Ebbsfleet meant we couldn't afford to lose or draw at home to whoever it was. So I never saw the good side of playing for Jamie Day. but I was confident, look, let's just get this season out of the way. If we make the playoffs, we make the playoffs. Next year will be great. And unfortunately, they took the decision to get rid of him. So I don't think it was many games I got to play for Jamie Day, which is like a massive shame, really.
Yeah. So Darren Mon set up, he got the job, and you started the following season like house on fire, didn't you? You were clear at the top. And then Sutton came, sort of came from nowhere. They just kept winning every week and somehow they reeled you in.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. When McMahon come in, we got like a house on fire, if I'm honest. He made me captain and I felt I felt like part of the management team, really. I felt like I really was that bridge between the players and the managers. He made me feel like really good. You know, I thought if we played together, we'd have been good mates, you know, with similar careers, similar personalities. And at one point, he pulled me to the side and he was like, "Tom, is everything okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, no, I'm fine." He's like, "Oh, you've been quiet today." I was like, "No, Gaffer, like, I'm fine." He's like, "Oh, look, if you're worried about Ebbsfleet, he's like, as long as I'm here, you're my captain. I love you. You're going to be playing." And yeah, something just went wrong. We won 11 out of our first 12. And we was like, it was a pleasure to play. And we was honestly, I reckon possession stats, we were slaughtering everyone, beating everyone. Playing well, playing badly, was just winning. And I think I listened to Stuart Lewis's podcast. I think he hit the nail on the head that we had too much money. We had a really good team that would have won the league. But if there was a bit of an issue, say, out wide, we went and signed a wide player when that probably weren't what we needed. And I think when we stopped winning, it might have just been a draw we got, or we might have got beat. I think that Ebbsfleet would have sort of team that went like, let's go and sign a player to see if that can fix it. And it sort of stepped back into where it was before. But also, I don't think people give Sutton enough credit. You know, how they caught us, I still don't know. At one point, we were so far ahead. They had a lot of games in hand, but we was like, they're not going to win all these games in hand, surely. And we're still going to win the majority of our games. But fair play to Sutton. They went on some run to catch us.
We're going to the playoff final then. It was a big surprise, wasn't it, when you were put at right back for that game. I think...
Yeah,
surprise made. So I remember talking to Jay afterwards, and he said Tom Bonner's not a right back.
Mm.
I think Godden was on the left wing, and again, Jay said we were delighted when we saw he was there, because someone like him, you want him in the box.
Yeah.
And then, so the right back. Tell us what happened. Obviously, you said you had a good relationship with
Yeah, I obviously I was captain of Ebbsfleet. I played every single game. I think I missed fire through suspension, but when I was fit, I played centre back, captain, and. I think it was the, I better get this right, the playoff semi-final, he talked about going at three at the back. And I can't remember if it was Kenny Clark or Achimpong who was coming in to play. It was one of the two. And anyway, decided against going with a back three. We ended up beating Whitehawk. And then setting up for Maidstone, and it was before the game. I was in the dressing room and he said, "Tom, you're going to play right back today." And I was like, whoa, like, I ain't played right back ever. I said, I had a year at left back at Dartford, but I was 23, a lot younger than I am now. But obviously, being the captain, being me, I was like, yeah, no, that's fine. Look, I'll do whatever. I'll play anywhere. I'll do anything for the club. So, yeah, that was a bit of a shock. So I carried on, got on with my preparations. We'd done the warm-up. And I got in the dressing room after, and McMahon's come over, and he said, "Tom, because you're playing right back, I'm going to make Danny Kedwell captain." So I was like, oh, what's like? I didn't say it at the time, but I was like, he went, "Because you're right back, I just want you to focus on playing right back. I don't want you to have any added pressure of being captain." So he actually took the armband off me as we was going out to start the game. So yeah, I've gone from being like centre half captain, hopefully like leading the team out to a playoff win, to being right back, and took the armband off me. So something went wrong at the later stages of my Ebbsfleet career. McMahon might tell you it was performances. I, to this day, don't know. We never really ironed out what the differences were. But, yeah, that was before the game. So I walked out and Kedwell led the team out. So, but as I said, it's the playoff final. You're not going to cry about it. Got on with it. And as you say, it didn't quite go to plan in the playoff final.
Your head must have been all over the place, though, to be captain and centre after suddenly... I've never heard of that before, to take the armband off someone.
Yeah.
Kickoff.
The only thing, as I walked out, I saw my dad. My dad looked as if to say, like, what's going on here? And I was like, that's fine. But no, but as the game started, look, I'm like to think I'm a professional. I'll do anything for any team I play for. So completely brush it to the back of my mind and just try to focus on playing right back, if I'm honest. Hadn't had any games there. And, yeah, I felt a bit of a bit like the Welling game. It weren't the greatest game. I think it was like Maidstone were okay, Ebbsfleet were okay. Rightly ended in a 1-1 draw, didn't it? So, but then in the extra time, I thought Maidstone blew up. I think we got the goal and Maidstone's heads dropped. And I'll be honest, I felt really comfortable. The crowd were a bit quiet and I just couldn't see Maidstone getting back into it. So to concede, I think it was like the 121st minute, wasn't it? Last kick of the game. Probably one of the lowest points of my career when Maidstone equalising.
Yeah, given what happened before with the sort of the captaincy and the change of position, when it comes to taking the penalties, do you feel, looking back, was your head in the right place to be taking the penalty?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I'm glad you brought it up as well, because I'm not a penalty taker, but I will always say, look, I'll take a pen. But there's normally five people above me that would take a pen, and I'm like, that's fine. And if I remember Gritty come over, Steve Gritt, with his old pen to take the numbers down, he went, right, who's taking the pens? And only four people put their hand up. I don't think anyone in the world knows this, like, outside of the Ebbsfleet team. So I'm like, well, we've got four, who's the fifth? And obviously, like, I know McMahon took the armband off me, but I felt I was the club captain. And the last thing I wanted to do was make someone take a penalty who didn't want one, so I stepped up. Yeah, but no, only four people put their hand up to take a pen, which I thought was a bit surprising. You know, we've got all these good, experienced players. And, yeah, no, I'm glad I took a pen. You know, it wasn't a great pen I missed, but I'd rather step up and live with missing than the thought of not stepping up for the team and sort of taking a back seat. So, yeah, I took and put my hand up and ended up taking one of the pens.
Yeah, it's a great shout. Given what happened then when it came to the end of the season, were you always going to have to leave, or did you feel you could have stayed on?
Well, again, I really don't want to dig McMahon out, because he was an unbelievable manager, but I don't think he dealt with the end of the season well either. I got to the ground, I think it was a week after the season ended, and he was glum. The mood was sour. We got in his office and he was like, beaten man. He's like, the weight of the world was on his shoulders. He's like, look, Tom, we're losing all the money. I'm getting rid of all of my mates here. I've got to get rid of players. Look, if you want to stay, we're talking 50% wage cut. And I would have been like, look, if 50% wage cut, let's talk about the season. Can it work? Who can we sign? But he sort of said that as if I'm going to say, oh, look, fine, I'll go. And he was like, yeah, so that's sort of it. And I sort of left the office thinking, have I been offered a deal with half money? Have I been released? Like, I couldn't really work out what was going on. And obviously you speak to the boys. I think I rang Stuart Lewis, I rang Jordan Parks. I think Stuart Lewis had another year, so he was, and Jordan Parks said, oh no, he had to say that to me. He's offered me like what I'm on. So I thought, obviously I'm going to talk to the boys and know. So before I made any decision, before I spoke to my mind again, Peter Viney texted me and said, I heard you're going to be leaving, like, thanks for everything. So I was like, oh, it's, rather than being a man and saying, look, Tom, I don't think I want you, or we're going to try something else, he went down the route of putting the ball in my court and making it me walk away on less money, which wasn't the case at all. So it didn't end great with McMahon at Ebbsfleet, and as soon as that happened, I was like, right, I'm going back to Dartford. I'm sort of going home, if you will, and clubs come in, but I was only ever going back to Dartford.
Yeah. Would you class it as a fallout, or have you spoken since, or?
Not a fallout at all. Not a fallout at all. Look, these things happen in football. When I went to Dartford, we had a cracking year that year. We was going for the title with Ebbsfleet, so I saw McMahon on a couple of occasions, and we had a beer after the game. We got on well. And before that sort of fallout, we was really good mates. We got on really well. So, no, I've got nothing but good things to say, but McMahon as a manager just felt a couple of situations towards the end weren't handled well.
Once you're back at Dartford, then obviously the one season that stands out is the head-to-head with Havant for the Conference South title. Didn't go your way in the end. What's your recollection of that running now?
To this day, I've got mixed feelings about that season. The year before, we was competing with Ebbsfleet, and Maidenhead sort of had Dave Tarpey, who sort of won the league for them, and we finished third and lost in the playoffs. But the next year, we was like, look, let's go and win it. And I think it was like a two-horse race all year. I think we was at the top, haven't caught us, haven't went in front, we caught them. And yeah, we won the last 10 games of the season, something that was unheard of. We won the last 10 games, but still lost the league by 3 goals. And now looking back, look, it probably will haunt me forever, the fact that I didn't lift the trophy with Dartford. So I decided to go back to Dartford because I felt like from where I left them, they got relegated twice and then finished mid-table. I thought, look, let's go and get Dartford back to where it was. Not saying I'm like the messiah and all of that, but I wanted to be a part of the build, and I thought that was what I went back for, to win the league with Dartford, and to lose by, it ended up being 3 goals on the last game of the season was, yeah, another sickening moment in my career, if I'm honest.
It must have been a really weird feeling at Bognor, because you had the reaction of the fans as well, didn't you?
Yeah, No, the Bognor game, so we had to win, we had to beat Havant's result by 3 goals, which is going to be a tough. So we was walking in at half time 0-0 against Bognor, really poor game. Havant were 2-0 up, so we was like, look, let's get ready for the playoffs. So we come out the second half, we scored, and then we heard Concord had scored in the other game to make it 2-1, sorry. And then we thought, just carry on, look, do our thing. We ended up scoring again to make it 2-0. So I thought, if they're only winning by one goal, we could get 3 more goals in the way we're going. We've got Alfie Pavey, Dwayne Achimpong, all these players. And from kickoff, Alfie Pavey missed a 1-on-1 to make it 3-0. So in my head, I'm thinking, do we go for this here? Do we go gung-ho and win 5 or 6-0 and beat them on goal difference? So it was a bit of a, what do we do? And then all of a sudden, you know, haven't have let in a second. And we're like, whoa, we're winning the league. All the crowd are literally like on the pitch away at Bognor. So I'm like, look, let's hold back. Let's just make sure we win the game now. They're drawing. So we ended up, I think El Bradbury gave away a penalty. And I thought, right, look, we're not going to win by 4 goals here. They've just scored. Let's just win. And that result would take care of itself. And I think it was the 88th minute, we were still going to be champions. And just a feeling around the place. And then, yeah, just like the life got sucked out of Bognor. I think Jason Pryor scored in the 88th, 89th minute to get a winner. And then it dawned on us that we're not going to win the league. So the mixed emotions in that game, I've never experienced anything like it. And obviously it didn't go our way in the end. So, yeah, it was hard to take.
And was the playoffs always destined? You didn't have the feeling, presumably, going into those playoffs like you had before?
No, and it was the first year where they allowed the 6th and 7th to make the playoffs. So we'd won 10 games in a row and lost the league on 3 goals. So we had like a week to dwell on that. Whereas Braintree, I think they finished over 20 points below us. They had a game on the Tuesday, which they won. So they've gone into the playoffs full of life, buzzing. And a week later, I've just felt like we couldn't get back to that momentum. There got cut. I thought we haven't even had a game to prepare for. And then also what was sitting like, we lost 1-0, but the fact that we didn't get an opportunity to go to their place in a replay and make amends, it was like, that was it. You've lost 1-0, you're out. All that hard work getting that close is done. And it's the first year the playoffs haven't had a two-legged affair. So yeah, it just, we didn't deserve to lose. We deserved to go up that year. And I just felt the playoffs suits teams that finish 6th and 7th. It gives them a free hit to go up, and it proved, I think, Braintree beat Hampton, who finished 5th. So, yeah, it was hard to take that year.
Was it a tough summer?
Yeah, no, it was. I think we knew Tony Berman was going to leave. I think that, as I said, that was what we was all waiting for. Let's go and win the league. But Quilly and Flanders come in and pick me up a bit, if I'm honest. I was rock bottom, thought like, are we going to get that close again? Am I going to win the league with Dartford? What's going to happen now? But they come in and said all the right things. Look, they breathe fresh life into the club. So as soon as I spoke to them, it picked me back up, and I thought, right, let's go again with the new regime, and maybe this is what we need to take it to that next level.
Let's go on to the quick fire questions. Best goal you've scored?
Oh, playoff final at Bedford. It's on YouTube. If you type it in, it goes straight in the top corner about 25 yards out. So
not a header?
No, it went ahead, I believe it or not. It's actually right foot volley, 25 yards. It's a good goal.
Favourite ground?
Wembley. Gotta be Wembley, yeah.
Favourite picture on your wall of a Scottish international when you were growing up?
God, who was playing for Scotland? Colin Hendry.
That's a good guess.
No Scottish players.
Toughest opponent you played against?
Steve Morrison. Just strong, good, knows the game, played at a high level, so knows all the tricks of the trade. You can't really get the better of him. I played against him when he was at Millwall in pre-season, but also played against him when I was at Rush and he was at Stevenage, and good player. I knew he was going to go on to real high level.
Best player you played with?
Luke Chadwick. When I was at Cambridge, he came in and he looked like a terrible footballer. He had like knock knees, couldn't really run, couldn't really pass or shoot, but you just couldn't get a ball off him. He was, apparently, he tells a story, he was so good when he was younger at taking people on that he never learnt to pass or shoot or cross, because he just used to get the ball and run around people. That's how good he was.
life after football, management, coaching, just walk away?
At the moment, I think walk away, enjoy some time away from football. But I don't think I'm going to be good after being away for a few months. So we'll probably revisit that within a year of retiring, I think.
Tom, been an absolute pleasure. We enjoyed your stories. You look back over your career. You've done pretty well for yourself and had many great successes. Thanks for your honesty and your time, and hopefully you enjoyed yourself.
No, thank you. Been brilliant.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.